The maid struck fresh life into the fire and refilled my glass. The wind hurled a handful of sleet against the window. This, I thought, was the life. I listened for more.
And did I tell you, Mr. Herriot? Tricky had another good win yesterday. You know, I'm sure he must study the racing columns. He's such a tremendous judge of form. Well, he told me to back Canny Lad in the 3 o'clock at Redcar yesterday, and, as usual, it won. He put on a shilling each way and got back 9 shillings.
These bets were always placed in the name of Tricky Woo, and I thought with compassion of the reactions of the local bookies. The Dalaby turf accountants were a harassed and fugitive body of men. A board would appear at the end of some alley urging the population to invest with Joe Downs and enjoy perfect security. Joe would live for a few months on a knife edge while he pitted his wits against the knowledgeable citizens, but the end was always the same. A few favourites would win in a row and Joe would be gone in the night, taking his board with him. Once I had asked a local inhabitant about the sudden departure of one of these luckless nomads. He replied unemotionally, "Oh, we broke him." Losing a regular flow of shillings to a dog must have been a heavy cross for these unfortunate men to bear.
"I had such a frightening experience last week," Mrs. Pumphrey continued. "I was sure I would have to call you out. Poor little Tricky, he went completely crack-a-dog."
I mentally lined this up with Flopbot among the new canine diseases and asked for more information.
"Well, it was awful. I was terrified. The gardener was throwing rings for Tricky. You know, he does this for half an hour every day."
I had witnessed this spectacle several times. Hodgkin, a dour, bent old Yorkshireman who looked as though he hated all dogs and Tricky in particular, had to go out on the lawn every day and throw little rubber rings over and over again. Tricky bounded after them and brought them back, barking madly till the process was repeated. The bitter lines on the old man's face deepened as the game progressed. His lips moved continually, but it was impossible to hear what he was saying. Mrs. Pumphrey went on.
"Well, he was playing his game, and he does adore it so, when suddenly, without warning, he went crack-a-dog. He forgot all about his rings and began to run round in circles, barking and yelping in such a strange way. Then he fell over on his side and lay like a little dead thing. Do you know, Mr. Herriot, I really thought he was dead, he lay so perfectly still, and what hurt me most was that Hodgkin began to laugh. He's been with me for 24 years, and I have never even seen him smile, and yet, when he looked down at that still form, he broke into a queer, high-pitched cackle. Oh, it was horrid. I was just about to rush to the telephone when Tricky got up and walked away, but he seemed perfectly normal."
Hysteria, I thought, brought on by wrong feeding and overexcitement. I put down my glass and fixed Mrs. Pumphrey with a severe glare. "Now look, this is just what I was talking about. If you persist in feeding all that fancy rubbish to Tricky, you are going to ruin his health. You really must get him onto a sensible dog diet of one or at the most 2 small meals a day of meat and brown bread or a little biscuit, and nothing in between." Mrs. Pumphrey shrank into her chair, a picture of abject guilt.
"Oh, please don't speak to me like that. I do try to give him the right things, but it is so difficult. When he begs for his little titbits, I can't refuse him."
She dabbed her eyes with a handkerchief, but I was unrelenting. "All right, Mrs. Pumphrey, it's up to you, but I warn you that if you go on as you are doing, Tricky will go crack-a-dog more and more often." I left the cozy haven with reluctance, pausing on the gravel drive to look back at Mrs. Pumphrey waving, and Tricky, as always, standing against the window, his wide-mouthed face apparently in the middle of a hearty laugh. Driving home, I mused on the many advantages of being Tricky's uncle. When he went to the seaside, he sent me boxes of oak-smoked kippers, and when the tomatoes ripened in his greenhouse, he sent me a pound or two every week. Tins of tobacco arrived regularly, sometimes with a photograph carrying a loving inscription. But it was when the Christmas hamper arrived from Fortnum & Mason's that I decided that I was on a really good thing which should be helped along a bit. Hitherto, I had merely rung up and thanked Mrs. Pumphrey for the gifts, and she had been rather cool, pointing out that it was Tricky who had sent the things, and he was the one who should be thanked. With the arrival of the hamper, it came to me blindingly that I had been guilty of a grave error of tactics. I set myself to compose a letter to Tricky. Avoiding Siegfried's sardonic eye, I thanked my doggy nephew for his Christmas gifts and for all his generosity in the past. I expressed my sincere hopes that the festive fare had not upset his delicate digestion, and suggested that if he did experience any discomfort, he should have recourse to the black powder his uncle always prescribed. A vague feeling of professional shame was easily swamped by floating visions of kippers, tomatoes, and hampers. I addressed the envelope to Master Tricky Pumphrey, Barlby Grange, and slipped it into the postbox with only a slight feeling of guilt. On my next visit, Mrs. Pumphrey drew me to one side.
"Mr. Herriot," she whispered, "Tricky adored your charming letter, and he will keep it always, but he was very put out about one thing. You addressed it to Master Tricky, and he does insist upon Mr. He was dreadfully affronted at first, quite beside himself, but when he saw it was from you, he soon recovered his good temper. I can't think why he should have these little prejudices. Perhaps it's because he is an only dog. I do think an only dog develops more prejudices than one from a large family,
Entering Skeldale House was like returning to a colder world. Siegfried bumped into me in the passage.
"Ah, who have we here? Why, I do believe it's dear Uncle Herriot. And what have you been doing, Uncle? Slaving away at Barlby Grange, I expect? Poor fellow, you must be tired out. Do you really think it's worth it? Working your fingers to the bone for another hamper?"